Listeners love hearing about valuation of businesses, and when the team at Worklyn Partners reached out to talk about theirs, I wanted to hear more about their strategy. This is a bonus episode of The Business of Tech. So, Zach, we've been talking because you guys are at Worklyn Partners are exploring the intersection of cybersecurity and IT services. And you're trying to bring together kind of a unique approach or a different investment strategy. What is that? What's the thesis that you're taking to market in this space?
At the highest level, we're a growth equity fund that invests in cybersecurity and IT services firms. And you hit right on it, right? It was born out of a thesis that increasingly for middle market and SMB customers, and even in the small enterprise, cybersecurity and IT are converging and becoming, you know, almost one and the same. That's long term, and I think that's probably obvious to a lot of you and a lot of your audience. What the end goal of what we're doing is building two different platforms, a cybersecurity platform and an IT services platform, both via acquisitions, and we've gotten started on that already. And you can think of these as sibling companies, brother, sister companies that collaborate and that have some shared services, but that ultimately, you know, two different management teams working together towards one end goal.
Okay, so you've used the word platform, and I'm going to ask you to define that because many people that are typically in this space might be assuming you mean a software platform. I think you mean a financial one. What's your definition when you say you're building a platform?
That confusion comes up all the time. The platform's kind of a clumsy word at this point. The way I would define it is like two different leadership teams, two different management teams, creating two different companies, right? And so the idea is there will be two management teams, one of an IT services platform or business, an answer to the work with board, and then a cybersecurity management team. And there will be acquisitions underneath both those teams.
Is the goal to build one company or a conglomerate of companies? Help me understand, because you've now described two management teams.
Yeah.
What are you building? One or two?
Two companies, yeah.
Okay. And so are you looking to, or what kind of companies are you looking for? Ones with expertise in one or the other, or expertise in both?
All of the above are great, right? I mean, the way we've started is one, you know, we've acquired one business with really deep expertise and proprietary software and development team that is laser focused 100% on cybersecurity. That's a business called Quadrant in Jacksonville, Florida. And then we've bought another business, NetExperts, that is, you know, really more IT focused, focused on networking implementations and integrations, and has some really high level engineers. Of course, there's security, you know, everywhere, but we are kind of delineating and bifurcating on that in that manner. And okay. Then where those two companies collaborate is frequent and, you know, serving different customers, going to market together, et cetera.
Okay. So the way I want to dive into this a little bit is to, because most of the people that are listening to this are owners of these kinds of organizations. They own MSPs or IT services companies, cybersecurity companies. So I think they want to understand a few things about what you're looking for. You talk about the end goal being to build this, this collection of businesses that are under the two, that become the two businesses. Explain for these somewhat lay people on this. Okay, how are you making money by spending to buy with them? What's the end dream of this? Is it to sell the whole thing? Is it a machine that makes you money? Like, how is that working for you guys putting the money in? How do you get it back?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is there may be a little of both, but certainly for the first, call it, 5 years, we're not going to be focused on distributing profits from the business to our investors. We're going to be focused on reinvesting those profits to continue to grow. I think one thing that's a bit unique about us is our time frame is genuinely a little bit longer term than a typical private equity firm or typical investment fund, for most PEs, the typical time horizon is going to be 3 to 5 years, right? You want to buy and then you want to flip, you want to sell the business. That's really when you deliver the returns to your investors within 3 to 5 years. We were painstaking about setting up our fund such that we would be more agnostic. And if the right decision was to hold beyond 5 years, year 8, year 10, that's an option. And so I think that's really going to be the event that generates value and returns for our investors. It's going to be that sale.
So it was that different time horizon that was interesting to me, because I know for me, I'm a bit of a proponent of, to build a proper services organization probably takes longer than the typical 3 years that an investor might look for. And so I was certainly very intrigued when I heard, okay, here's a group that is looking at the time for horizon that makes more sense to me to build a services org. So where I want to go then is okay, so that's the out for your investors. If I'm thinking about the in, like who you're spending on, how are you evaluating these companies? Like, how are you valuing them? What are you evaluating them on?
Yeah, I'll relate one of the first answers to this question to the last question you asked, which is one thing we're probably a little less obsessed with is recurring revenue. Right. Like, that's not obviously recurring revenue. Contract recurring revenue is more attractive than revenue that you have to go out, get or replace every year. That's a reality. But I think some of the reason why you see this sort of obsession with recurring revenue is if you're a PE firm or, even a strategic and your time horizon to create a return is 3 to 5 years, you got to be pretty darn sure about what you already have and your ability to keep what you already have. And you may not have time to go build out the machine that, converts project work into recurring, or that, essentially becomes a well-oiled machine of bringing in more project work. We happen to think that, project work, one-off work, professional services, consulting, whatever you want to call it, is just really important to the end customer. You need it to serve the end customer well. And thus, it's, in a way, it's the most cost-effective form of sales and marketing we can do, right? Is just have, virtual CIOs or virtual CISOs, whatever you want to call them, who can go and spend time with a customer and talk to them about strategy, talk to them about what they need to implement, as opposed to just say, hold on, we want to start selling you a retainer for something you don't even really know about.
Okay. Now, I've had the few times I've had discussions around this, the MSPs and IT services companies that listen to this have really liked to hear information about the terms of deals. Now, I'm not going to ask you about any specific deal that you have done, but I'm also not going to let you have a conversation like this without giving me some guidelines of what these been. I always rebel on the financial terms not disclosed. Well, that means none of the rest of us can learn anything. So, not assuming any particular deal, okay, what are you evaluating on to make the calculation? How are you valuing the MSPs you're buying?
Yeah, and that's related to the last question you asked, I think, of what are you looking at? It's EBITDA probably for the vast majority of IT services businesses, right? So you're looking, what's the bottom line profitability? But again, I think we're a little different here, where we really care about capabilities and we really care about industry expertise. So, I can get in, I'll save this a little bit, but, we have very specific strategy and we prioritize certain verticals for that IT services business that we're building. And I think that causes us to probably overweight compared to others, exposure to certain industries or maybe be more interested in exposure to certain industries. But ultimately, we're not reinventing the wheel. There's not a deep science that we uncovered and no one else did. You know, we're looking at bottom line profitability. We're kind of marrying that up with top line revenue. And we're saying, okay, you know, we can feel comfortable paying of the cash flows or the EBITDA that's the bottom line.
Okay. Now I'm gonna push here because you specifically brought up the EBITDA, which I expect you to do. And so did actually one of my Patreon supporters who specifically said the next time you're talking to somebody from an investor perspective, it would be really valuable to the listener for you to walk through how you're going to calculate EBITDA. Like, pretend you're looking over the books of a fictional Contoso. What are you asking to see in order to figure out the value, and how are you doing that calculation?
Yeah, I mean, typically you'll get most of the way there with the books that folks spit out from QuickBooks or what have you. So you can get the net operating income. And then it's really specific to the business, right? Where you look at, I mean, I think the most common thing that, you know, in the world we play in, right, of kind of sub $5 million EBITDA, you know, sometimes 500K EBITDA businesses is, you see owner ad docs, and that's got to be, you know, there's sort of a high level verification you do of financials. And then if you move further along, we would bring in an accounting firm to come back to us. And there's, you can argue and split hairs over where you put labor costs in terms of cost of goods sold, but that doesn't actually really matter for EBITDA. At the end of the day, you know, what really moves EBITDA in these type of businesses is owner ad tax, right? So maybe you're expensing a car, or you're expensing, you know, all sorts of crazy things get expensed, and we, you know, it's fun to see, and it's you know, not offensive or anything like that, but that tends to be where, you know, EBITDA can get increased by 200, 300 grand or reduced by 200, 300 grand. In terms of ad debts, so expenses that were, you know, maybe not core to the business or won't be going forward.
Thus, if you're looking at it, are you doing your calculations on the valuation then on EBITDA? Like, give me kind of a bit of some numbers on what you're doing there to value it for somebody. Are you multiplying by, you're not multiplying by one. I suspect you're not multiplying by 20. So narrow that down for me. What are you doing? What are you multiplying by?
I mean, I think different businesses deserve and get different multiples, and you know, what the buyer sees is probably different. For, you know, for us, I'll tell you, it's different today, having completed our first two acquisitions, than it was. You know, let's say in October of 2021. But yeah, I mean, I think multiples for sub $5 million EBITDA businesses, you're starting to see them creep, you know, at the high end into the double digits. And at the low end, you know, you can be paying 3x EBITDA, 5x EBITDA. It's all about the situation. So it's hard to generalize. I will say this. I do think we're probably at a peak for valuations, given the math. You know, nothing's changed about what underlying great businesses MSPs are and IT services firms are, and kind of the macro market tailwinds are I think still favorable, but the macro economic tailwinds, the rate environment, I think will eventually this year trickle down and have back. You know, it's already causing massive contractions in the public markets. If you look at publicly traded SaaS companies that are getting killed in terms of their valuations, and ultimately MSPs are kind of a vehicle to bring some of those more successful SaaS companies to a lower market customer. And to that extent, I think ultimately you're going to see some level of valuation adjustment. Just as you saw, not as severe as in the public markets, but in a similar way. Anyways, you didn't really ask me that. So, I wish I had a better, clearer answer on what multiples should be or are, but the truth is they vary massively.
Okay. So let me give you another way to make it optimal. Like, so if somebody is looking to say like, hey, if I'm looking to achieve, I'm pulling a number out, a 7x multiple, right? What would you, the investor, be looking then for to say, okay, they've got to have checked these certain check boxes for me for it to be at that level?
Yeah. And I think the answer for us is different than for another investor. We probably care a little bit more about top line revenue. You know, certainly for a business that size, you'd probably want to see double digit revenue at the very top. I think we're probably a little less obsessed with, hey, how good are your EBITDA margins today? Because we're building something long term, and I think the sort of factors that go into your bottom line profitability can change drastically and will change drastically. New tech stacks and what have you. I think what else I would say is vertical focus for us, right? We love the insurance space, right? So if you've proven that you've got a big base of insurance customers and you've got some expertise around an application that's specific to that industry, okay, we're probably paying a tick more in terms of or multiple more, single digit more in terms of the multiple, then maybe our competitors will would have.
All right, I'll let you off the hook then at this point, and then I'm going to say, so let's do the other bits that people like to know. How does like a payout and a deal term look on, again, typically the way you guys are looking at these?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and people might already know this already, but I think from an owner or a seller's perspective, there's like really three things that matter, right? There's cash at close, there's an earnout typically based on, you know, either maintaining performance or improving performance. And then there's, you know, rolling equity, you know, rolling, buying some stock of whatever entity is buying you instead of getting paid cash. I think we are more than the typical buyer. We would like to see, some real buy-in, because in general, we're looking for business owners that want to stick around, that want to come grow with us and operate. We're looking for those people. I think if you talked to me in a year, we'd probably be in a situation where we're more excited about or more willing to spend lots of time with folks who are saying, hey, I want to sell this business and get out. But so for us, what all that means is cash at close is typically going to be, you know, the majority of the deal structure. But, you know, when we work with owners that we really like, we want it to be, you know, enough that's significant, over 50%, but not too much over that, right? And then the rest of the deal comes in rolled equity and in earnout. And again, I think we like to see long-term commitment, right? So sometimes we meet with owners and they say, hey, I don't really care when you pay me, you know, as long as the terms of the earnout are reasonable, and that tends to align with us, right? Because we want folks who are really putting their money where their mouth is in terms of wanting to stick around and grow, be a part of the strategy.
So you've given me the insight then on the way you're thinking about retaining leadership. So for this space, if I hand you the magic wand, right, and you have the ability to wave it, and it'll be what the outcome and what you've built looks like in 5 years. So we're talking about that 2027, right? You're through that bit. What does the org look like, and what services are you, is that larger set of orgs taking to market?
Yeah, sure. I think you have a tightly managed, you know, cybersecurity company that on one side that feels really like one company with one brand, but that it's comprehensive in terms of the services they offer. broadly, I'd look at that proactive services, managed services, and reactive services, right? So, you know, helping folks build strategy and remain compliant or become compliant with whatever compliance regime they're facing in terms of cybersecurity, managing that, keeping them compliant and monitoring their network. And that's what the first business we bought does, right? That they're unbelievably good in terms of, you know, deploying with customers and monitoring their IT environments to look for security events and help them respond to that. And then reactive is, you know, the incident response, digital forensics world of, hey, I got breached, or I think I may have been breached, which is becoming, you know, all too common in this world. And being an advisor and helping an end customer kind of on that journey. So that's the cybersecurity side. It's a pretty unified business. I think on the IT side, that IT platform, as we're calling it, is a little more of a constellation of businesses with some shared services, but there will be separate business units because I think, you know, ultimately there are vertical specific software applications that, you know, you might, like I used the example of insurance earlier, right? We would have an insurance business unit run by a general manager that's really just focused on serving that end customer. And as a result, has a team with capabilities that are specific to that end vertical. We might have another business that does SLED, state, local, and education. That's a super unique end customer. You can't compare it really to any sort of commercial customer. And so we think that requires a separate business unit and a separate brand. So it's more of a constellation on the, we kind of call it IT Co, Cyber Co. IT Co is more of a constellation model where you've got a group of affiliated businesses that share services and have some common leadership, but also, you know, owners, hopefully former owners and current owners that are empowered to run their business the way they have.
You brought up insurance. I'm kind of interested. Are you viewing yourselves as brokers, agents in that? Do you think you're going to be building an insurance arm, like insure yourselves? Where's your head at for that?
I think that, you know, we're going to stick to our knitting to start. I did come from a world of advising, investing in cybersecurity. I do not come from the insurance world, and my business partner Johnny doesn't either. Although he's way smarter on that than I am. But I think, you know, to start, what we want to do is be a partner to insurance carriers and to the agents, right? And to just sort of be. I think there's room for a lot of companies in the broader ecosystem of getting folks to be at least compliant enough or mature enough and hardened enough that someone will write them a cybersecurity policy. I think we've seen a period where folks were writing cybersecurity policies, you know, carriers were writing policies, and then oftentimes not fully paying them out. And we're going to see some pushback on that. And I think the other thing we're seeing simultaneously is it's actually becoming harder for, you know, end companies who want cyber insurance to get cyber insurance. And we want to help solve those pain points. Is it going to be by carrying insurance ourselves or creating insurance product ourselves? Probably not to start, but, you know, never say never for the future.
Never say never. So last sort of question here. You're obviously out there looking. Are you soliciting inbound if people are interested in exploring potentially being acquired? Is that something you're looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. We love to talk. We love, like, just learning businesses, right? Every business we talk to is slightly different. I think I've actually met a company through you that we learned a lot from. And so I think the answer is, yeah, the door's always open. Email inbox is always open. Definitely soliciting those conversations because we do want to make at least one acquisition this year. We did two last year. I think I would expect two this year. but one at a minimum. But like you said, we are building slow, right? A little slower probably than a typical big PE back pull up in space. We want to do things intentionally and more slowly.
Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio. Or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.